Dear listeners, welcome at yet another episode in this fourth season of the Meet the Expert podcast series. In this series, together with well-known experts from around the globe, we explore challenges and opportunities in the big veterinary world. In this episode, we will spend attention to a well-known pathogen, porcine reproductive and respiratory syndrome virus, causative agent of all kinds of lung issues as well as reproductive problems, and how that can be monitored using tongue fluids. That conclusion won a European PERS Research Award, so it's definitely something to watch. With us today is Professor Andrea Ladinich of the University of Veterinary Medicine, Vienna in Austria. Welcome, Professor Ladinich.
Hello.
Hello. Happy to have you with us today. A few words about this podcast. The Meet the Expert podcast series is a co-production of Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health and Pig Progress. And my name is Vincent Terbeek. I'm editor of Pig Progress and I'm the host of today's episode. And present at this podcast is also audiovisual editor Iris Hoffman, without whom this podcast wouldn't be possible. And you will hear more of her later on. Our guest, Professor Ladinich, is attached to the University of Veterinary Medicine Vienna, as I said, in Austria. She's been attached to this university for most of her career. And since 2017, she's been head of the university's veterinary clinic for pigs, the only one in Austria. Welcome, Professor Ladinich. Before we go into detail a little bit, as I said, you've been working with the university for most of your career. What makes this university such a great place to work?
So one thing that is similar to other German-speaking countries here in Vienna is that we run a clinic for swine. So we're me and my team, we're really clinical vets that also do research. And that that brings us in between people that really do basic research and vets in the field. And that's kind of a unique, but also a kind of nice thing that we are still outside in the field, that we're still visiting farms. But on the other hand, we're also doing research, and that is mainly applied research. So we're looking into things that would help vets on farms, and diagnostics and infectious diseases is one of our focuses at the end. And that's how we also ended up with this PERS Award.
I see. What kind of pigs end up at the clinic? I assume that not every sick pig is a candidate to end up. Well,
No.
How does that work?
So veterinarians we do not take care of farms ourselves. So we are usually kind of a second opinion, or practitioners can contact us so that we either come to a farm and do a herd visit, to always together with the herd attending veterinarian, or they can also submit either samples they collect in the fields for diagnostics, or they can also submit live pigs. So we would offer a vehicle to run to the farm to pick up those pigs. And those costs are also covered by the university because we need that for training purposes. So we bring in live pigs, and then we go together with students, do a clinical examination of those pigs, and then they get killed, they get necropsied, we collect samples, and then do diagnostics on those pigs. So that's part of our routine services that we kind of offer.
Okay. Your publications cover a wide range of topics within pig veterinary science and infectious diseases. Yet we're here talking about a PERS virus. Am I right to understand that within the pig viruses, PERS has your special attention?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we know that virus for like over 30 years now, and there are still so many open questions. Things that we don't understand, how the virus is in the end escaping the immune response, how the virus is transmitted in utero from dams to piglets, and so on. So there are still, from a research perspective, a lot of open questions going on. And then also in the field, I think farms or veterinarians, farmers often struggle to really deal with the virus. And although we have vaccines, still, it's not that easy that you use a vaccine and then the problem is solved. So, a lot of struggle still going on. And then that's why I think we're dealing a lot with PERS, yeah, and it keeps us busy, yeah, both in research and also in the field, I guess.
Virus does it's never finished, it seems. It continues to generate questions to the...
Yeah, definitely.
Last year, we already spoke to Spanish veterinarian Jordi Baeyes, and he was talking about tongue tips as a method for PERS virus detection. And I understand that dealing with tongue fluids basically comes down to the same method. It's just a different name for it. Before I go into that deeply, why is there so much attention for monitoring PERS virus?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things of that, or the specialties of that virus, that it can hide. It's not that easy to detect. It's highly genetically variable. So we have so many strains out in the field, and that's why you really want to know the status of your herd. So is it positive or not? Is it stable? Where in the herd is it circulating? Is there a new virus being introduced or not? And that's why I think a lot of farms try to know what's actually going on and try to monitor. And that's why we also test different options and try to find alternative ways to not have to collect individual blood samples, which is for sure very laborious. And that's why different sampling methods came up over the last decades, almost, I would say, over the last couple of years. And tongue tips are just, or tongue fluids are just one of them now. Mm-hmm.
But I understand that, for instance, existing methods may not always be sufficient, or may, for instance, castration fluids if there is no castration going on, then that may not be an option.
That's in the end why tongue fluids came up as an alternative sampling methods. I mean, processing fluids, as we call them in English, more or less. So it's the liquid that actually comes out of the testicles and also the tails. So when piglets are processed in the first week of life, then that material is collected. And that has been a widely used method over the last couple of years, ever since that method came up, because it's easy to collect sample. It naturally occurs in all farms that are actually tail docking and castrating. But here comes also the downside, that particularly in the European Union, or in Europe, I would say, not European Union, but in Europe, a lot of countries ban tail docking. Some already do not castrate. And in others in Europe, that will be gone in the next years or so. So we have to look for alternative methods. And that's why smart people came up with the idea, what else could we collect? And it's not us as veterinarians, but the farmer in the end, right? Because for a veterinarian, when it comes to dead-born or weak-born piglets that die, I would always recommend go and collect the thymus. We know that in an in utero infected piglet, the thymus is the primary place where the virus replicates. But that might not be that easy to collect for a farmer, to really be 100% sure that you find this particular piece of tissue in every piglet. And that's why tongue fluids came up. It's a tissue that can easily be identified. You can take the tip and then simply cut it with scissors, and a farmer can do that. And it's a well blood supply type of tissue where serosanguinous fluid will come out, and that can be then used for testing of PERS.
Maybe a stupid question, but seeing that PERS virus can be airborne, why do we need to monitor and establish this on a animal basis, so to say? Is it just not enough to measure or pick up the virus in the air?
That would be pretty straightforward and nice if we could collect air, or we also tried dust samples, so some kind of environmental samples. But in the end, the viral load is not big enough, and we also have to collect enough animals to, in the end, pick it up. That's why we go for different sampling methods, and we also try to collect air samples and to really find the virus in there. I mean, it has been published mainly in North America, but we could never really reproduce, except when we really disturb the virus in the air experimentally. But other than that, it's not that easy to pick it up, and you need high enough concentrations in the air to really find it. And that's why in the end you go and have to sample animals. And then it's also that the specialty of that virus, that it can hide in animals, and you don't see it in the end of the day. So you don't know if an animal is infected or not. That's why you have to sample maybe for more than that, and viral load might be maybe very low. So sampling and monitoring a farm for PRRS is not that easy or not that straightforward.
I guess
why people look for best methods and also compare different sampling material, what works better, and so on. Yeah.
Understand. Well, the research was carried out by a team around Sophie Dürlinger, I think.
She was one of my team members, mm-hmm. but unfortunately left the university a couple of months ago.
I understand.
Yeah.
Could you walk us through how exactly the research was set up?
So in the end, we had a experimental study going on. So we did a experimental infection in pregnant gilt. So we have a reproductive model of the disease, and we were infecting gilts in their last trimester of gestation with that virus. So that's the period when we know in gestation that animals are most susceptible and the virus transmits from the dam to the fetuses. So we knew that we're going to do that experiment, and we're going to have all these fetuses that and pregnant gilts that are going to be killed, and then a lot of samples are going to be collected. And there were these new sampling methods out. And so we figured, okay, they have been tested in the field. So there were the first reports that it works under field conditions. And we figured we want to do that also and reproduce it under experimental conditions when we have a lot of fetuses that also have different levels of virus, and we will measure them in different samples. And then we can easily compare viral load in serum, for example, of those fetuses and thymus, and then compare those new alternative sampling methods. So we collected then tongue tips and compared that on an individual level. So how much virus do we find in the tongue fluid of an individual piglet compared to viral load in serum of that same piglet and in the thymus? And then on a liter basis, we also collected the processing fluids, because you don't get enough liquid from one individual testicle. So you have to really, that's a pooled sample. So we did that on a liter basis, and then could also compare viral levels that you get in those different sampling materials to really properly validate at the end of the day the tongue fluids.
Yeah, that it is actually representative for what you would find elsewhere.
Exactly. So that you can really compare different sampling materials and different sites that you would collect within a dead born piglet or a piglet that dies shortly after birth, for example, or maybe also piglets that survive. So we could do that under experimental conditions, in which we had the trial, and that's why I decided let's go for it. And we also wanted to compare it though to the field. And that's why we had those two arms in that project. On the one hand, the experimental study, where we really compared tongue fluids with processing fluids with individual serum and thymus samples. And then on the other hand, we also followed two farms that had acute outbreaks of PRRS, and then monitored them after the outbreak on a batch-wise system, and then collected for every farrowing batch, we collected tongue tips from all the dead piglets and the weak-born piglets that died, and the processing fluids, and then also serum samples from due-to-wean piglets, which was done for quite a long time in the past to categorize sow herds. And then we also went and collected oral fluids in the early nursery phase.
I see.
And just checked which method works best to actually see when is the active virus circulation over and what method works best under field conditions. Yeah, so those were the two aspects that we had in the project.
So basically, if people listen to the previous podcast on this topic, that they could see, okay, the research towards obtaining tongue tips or tongue fluids has gone a lot wider, and you've kind of tried to build on earlier experiences, so to say.
So to say, we build on. And I mean that the sampling material is used wider. It's now not only used for PRRS, it's starting to get used also for other pathogens like PCV2 and everything that can be transmitted in utero, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You can use that. Yeah. And the body of literature is growing.
So not that that makes much sense. Well, obviously, you won the prize, so the results were significant for you. I understand that this method yielded both good results under experimental conditions as well as in the field. What were these conclusions that you could draw?
Yeah, we could in the experimental setting we could show that the tongue fluids work. They might not work as well on an individual animal level as, for example, serum. So viral loads were slightly higher in the individual serum sample, and then second was the viral load in the thymus of those individual pigs, and then it was followed by the tongue fluids. But still, it's comparable. Almost even slightly lower, but you can find the virus in those tongue fluids. So we could confirm that under experimental conditions. And then also from the field, we saw that when you compare the different sampling material, tongue fluid, processing fluid, individual serum samples from U2-wind piglets that are pooled by five versus oral fluids in the early nursery, then the tongue fluids were really working best, meaning that it was the longest that we had positive results after the acute outbreak compared to these other options. And when you really think about what population you sample with the different methods, then it for sure makes a difference. And with the tongue tips, you actually collect samples from the most likely PRRS positive population, I would say, because it's the ones that are born dead, which are for sure more likely to be PRRS infected in utero versus those that survive, or the ones that were weak born and then die within the first couple of days. So compared to processing fluids, those are the piglets that survive, that are castrated and tail docked at the end. So it's a different population. And that in the end, to me, makes sense that tongue fluids might target a different type of piglet that is in the end more likely to be PRRS positive. And that that was the explanation why we found virus longer in those tongue fluids compared to processing fluids.
I see. It's just all the candidates were affected by the virus severely, so to say.
Not all. I don't think that every individual, but as a collective pool of samples, in the end, you might be more likely to find the virus. I have to say that it's what we learned, those lessons, particularly from the field, that it also plays a big role how many animals you actually sample. Because in those two farms that we followed after the acute outbreak, not every batch, and they had 3 to 4 week batch farrowing intervals. So every 3 weeks, one group of sows was farrowing. And we did not consecutively find the virus in every single tongue fluid sample. And in the end, we also figured out that the number of dead born or died pigs that you collect plays a role. So the more the better, the higher the chances are that you actually find an infected one at the end of the day. So that also makes sense. And at the beginning, we had to really convince the farmers to really collect every tongue tip from every dead born piglet, and that we had enough numbers of animals being sampled. So that is also something I would recommend to everyone that wants to use that method, that it's really important. The more animals you sample, the higher the chances that you will find it, because particularly when the infection becomes more endemic, and I think there might be only very, very few individual piglets that are still infected. And the more you sample, the higher the chances that you pick up on those, for sure.
That makes sense. Thank you for those. I'm going to turn to my colleague Iris as well, because she's got some practical questions.
Hi, I certainly have some questions for you as well. What would be the practical advantage of using this proposed new approach? For instance, is it more affordable or quicker or perhaps more accurate than other methods?
As I mentioned, I mean, it's a method that the farmer can, a sample that the farmer at the end can collect. And I think that's what we are looking for, that not the veterinarian has to be present to collect blood samples from individual animals. So it should be an easy to sample method, a type of sample that everybody can identify easily. And I think a tongue is, can be identified by anybody, and you take scissors and cut it out. Mm-hmm. Although I have to say that some farmers were also not that happy to actually do the job, because when the piglets are dead and kind of rigid, it's sometimes not that easy to really open the mouth and get the tongue out. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But still, you're looking to find a sampling method. You don't have to open the carcass. You don't want a full necropsy or something involved. And then I think the tongue is a well blood supplied type of tissue that you get enough liquid out. That's what you want at the end of the day. And so, yeah, it makes sense to go for it, I guess.
Yeah, definitely quicker, I think, because, and also more affordable, because the veterinarian doesn't have to go to the farm to
exactly
do the job.
And you don't have to open the, like, a body cavity, like open the chest to get the thymus out, or open the yeah.
No, it sounds quick. Yeah. Just open the mouth, get the tongue out, and snap.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And practically, if there are any swine veterinarians listening to this podcast who wish to try this new method, what should they do?
Yeah, as I told you, make sure that all the dead-born and weak-born piglets that die within the first couple of days are really collected. So the higher the number you sample, the better the chances.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the end, it's fairly easy. It's similar to processing fluids. Like, you take the tissues, you throw them in a baggie, like can be a simple Ziploc bag. You freeze and thaw the whole thing once, like the whole bag, and there will be enough fluid coming out of those tissues, and then that's actually what the lab will be using to extract the RNA from the virus from, and then test it by PCR.
Yeah, so they don't need other materials or steps, and they
no nothing special. Simple Ziploc bags should do it, because we specifically look for the virus, so we don't have to worry about the sterile sampling bag or something. Because in the end, you do a PCR that really specifically targets that PRRS virus.
Yeah, exactly. Well, great. Those were actually my questions. So back to you, Vincent.
Thank you. In terms of practical questions, is there an age limitation on how long an animal has died before you can, after which you can sample it? I mean, if the carcass has been there for a few days, does it still pay off to test it then? Or do you want to do it straight after death?
It will depend a little bit on the viral load. It's hard to generalize because for sure it's an RNA virus, and RNA will degrade over time. But on the other hand, we also know that autolyzed fetuses in a sow that die and then sit there for a while might still be positive. I mean, the viral load will decline over time, but it's still detectable. It will for sure depend on what was the level at the very beginning. So probably it's better to collect them than not to collect, but fresh is always better for sure.
Makes sense. I have two questions to draw this podcast bit by bit to an end. The paper obviously has won a European PRRS Research Award. Why, in your opinion, do you think that this prize has been attracting so much acclaim? Or in other words, what is the importance of this study?
I mean, it's confirming that we have a new sampling method that is practically relevant and that can be used in the field. And that's what I usually try to do with my team as well, particularly our under circumstances with our lab methods. When there is a new method, then I want it validated under our conditions and see how is it really working. And we also confirmed it for this experimental setting, which I think has value that we know, okay, how much virus is there in an individual piglet? And then how much can I find in serum versus in those tongue fluids? Maybe what's the level of detection? So how much has to be present so that it can be picked up? And for sure, we also want to publish that. So the manuscript is in preparation, and then hopefully will be published soon.
And then we shall share it on Pig Progress as well. And a last general question. Will there be follow-ups In terms of research, for instance? Would you be are there any more steps to expect with this detection method, or are you investigating different kinds of methods?
Not at the moment. I mean, for us, I think it's valid to use it in the field. I think we've shown that also other literature and other papers out there have confirmed that it's a valid method to be used. Maybe in the future, we also might want to test it for different pathogens. That's also some questions that came up there. But other than that, we are not really investigating any further at this stage in those tongue fluids. We're trying to think about new ideas to apply for the research award again.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be different things hopefully coming.
Yeah, and hoping to win more awards there. Thank you for that. I think we covered it pretty well. Is there anything that you wish to address?
No, I think we talked a lot about tongue fluid, so.
Very good, very good. Well, then I'm going to thank you for being with us on this podcast. And I'm sure that our listeners have also gotten a more complete idea of what is possible in the world of PRRS virus monitoring and detection. So I'd like to thank you for being with us today at the Meet the Expert podcast series. As a last reminder to our audience, you'll be able to find this episode as well as previous ones through the regular podcast channels as well as the Big Progress website. Just search for Meet the Expert by Big Progress and Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health. And with that, I'll let you go. I thank you for listening, dear audience, and thanks to Professor Ladini for being with us today.